Welcome back to WINS, aka Women in Sports Podcast. This is our first US-focused episode of WINS, so I'm very excited. Today we have Lillian Childress co-hosting from our Washington, D.C. office, and we have a very special guest, Angela Ann Redmond-Debro, Associate General Counsel for Athletics at the University of Mississippi, aka Ole Miss. Ann, would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. As you said, I'm Angela Ann Redmond-Debro, and I go by Ann. I have been here at Ole Miss for 18 months serving as the Associate General Counsel for Athletics. Prior to that, I served at as General Counsel at Alabama A&M University. I've also been an Assistant U.S. Attorney and an Assistant DA. So I've had fun in my legal career, and really excited about where it goes next as I'm now starting out in athletics.
It sounds like you've had a very, very busy career. And I wonder, can you just tell me a bit about your personal connection to sports? So did you always imagine yourself in the role you're in today, or did you have something else in mind when you were growing up?
Let's just say I think I've actually come full circle at this moment. I grew up the daughter of a coach. My dad coached girls basketball and football. My highlight, as I always say, I never had perfect attendance until he stopped coaching because I followed him everywhere he went. On Fridays, the football players would come and pick me up from school. I would go and help serve team meals right before games. Basketball, my dad had a great girls basketball team. They were always trying to vie for the state championship. So we always had to go to playoffs at the end of the season. And I kind of tried to play sports. I did 1 year basketball, but I was so used to my dad and his coaching that I, you know, decided if I couldn't play for him, I didn't want to play. So I got into cheerleading, and I also was in the band. So I've always been around sports, and I just see it as a true gateway, an avenue for social skills and, you know, how kids and children, just individuals can interact with each other. Both of my kids played sports, enjoyed the camaraderie they shared, how it gave them responsibility. And I just think that, you know, being involved with athletics, it just gives you a different viewpoint. And as I say, when I say I come full circle, I initially wanted to start a career in sports when I was in law school, but I fell in love with being a prosecutor. So it kind of pushed that dream back. But as I did prosecution and then went on to be general counsel at work in higher ed for a while, the opportunity came for me to get into the sports area. And I just feel that all of those experiences had really given me a good foundation and is able to help me be better at the job that I have today.
And we last saw each other a little over a year ago at Linklater Sports Law Conference in New York. I remember the conference happening just as there were heavy whispers of new name, image, and likeness guidance coming out. How has your day-to-day changed since the updated guidance? Did it provide the desired structure around NIL activities, or did it create more questions than it answered?
Well, I'll say for my institution, it just kind of helped us make sure we had the right guardrails in place. A lot of the things that the NCAA came out with, we were, you know, kind of on the line about, you know, how we should handle and how we should, you know, do it. One thing that was real important to us that we saw when the guidance came out was how the university could interact with collectives. We have a collective, and we had set our own guidelines because we have the state law in Mississippi as to how we could operate in this NIL space. And I just believe that those guidance, the guidance that came down from the NCAA actually helped us with, you know, staying within those particular guardrails. Now, did it raise more questions? I don't know if it necessarily raised any more questions than we already had because we were already in this weird space. But I do think it gave people an idea of what we need to do, how we can do it. And as we do our day-to-day work here, whenever we feel that there's something that's just not cut and dry as to how we should operate, we always go back to it and just see if it fits within that guidance, or if we can look to the NCAA rules and bylaws to see if we can find a situation that's very similar, or, you know, but we always try to find a way to make sure that we feel that we're working within the NCAA guidelines.
And would you say that when you're looking for similar examples, you look across other schools, or is there a pool of information that you can reference?
You know, a lot of times we all have opportunities to reach out to each other. So we do kind of, you know, reach out and people share just enough, you know. Also, you know, we just look to other resources. We, you know, look in the news. We talk to people, use guidance that has been issued from other entities that are in this space. So, you know, it's always trying to be a source of information for our people, which means it takes us looking for the information as well.
Just this past year, the IRS released a memo stating that many NIL collectives that develop paid NIL opportunities for student athletes are not tax exempt. Now, I'm conscious that the NIL collectives typically operate independently from universities, but has the IRS's stance had any rippling effects at the university level?
I would say for those collectives that came out as, you know, saying that their contributions were tax exempt, I think they all had to go back and revamp and try to figure out, you know, were they really within the guidelines of the IRS rules that stated, or did they have to change, you know, how they were operating? Fortunately for us, our collective never was in that particular area. They did not open up as a tax exempt organization. So it did not change for us, the guidance that came out, because we were never operating in that space. But I do know several entities did have to kind of change what they were doing and how they were operating because of that guidance, just to ensure that their donors did not have any issues in regards to their tax exempt claims in the future.
And I imagine that the IRS's stance may have had some effects on people's incentives to potentially donate money to these collectives.
Yeah, I'm sure it did, because I'm sure, you know, having the opportunity to make donations in that they be tax exempt may have triggered or allowed certain people that were interested in NIL but not quite sure about it, you know, an opportunity to have a reason as to why they wanted to do it. I do think that with the IRS ruling, it changed some of the giving standards, but I don't think that it stopped any.
Although the NCAA has updated its guidance and the IRS has provided some recent clarification on NIL collectives, there's still this noticeable absence of federal legislation. Do you anticipate that any federal laws are on the horizon? And is there a particular rule that you think should be codified?
Well, you know, we've had several hearings on Capitol Hill, and, you know, there have been a lot of draft proposals. And I think when you look through all of them, they all have something good in them. But we really have to look at, you know, are all athletes, are all institutions, are all states created equal? You know, how do we manage a nationwide law in regards to this? Should one happen? I do think we need some more guardrails. I don't know if it comes from legislation, national legislation, or if it comes from the NCAA. But the one thing that I know that for me, what is very troublesome, is the whole issue about the student athlete being an employee. I just think it brings on a whole nother set of issues that we have to deal with. I'm not sure if it's really beneficial. But that's just me personally thinking about how do you take a 17-year-old and, you know, turn them into what we would consider to be a full-fledged, full-time working adult as an employee. You know, college is meant to be a time of transition. You know, are we able to transition them into that working lifestyle? You know, so that's one of the things that concerns me as we look at future legislation. You know, how would that play out if that happened? But yeah, I'm just not, there's so many things that go on with NIL. I can't just pick one to say that, yes, this has to happen, because I think everything is just such a chain reaction that if you do one thing, you know, then you're going to set off another chain reaction. I think we just have to be very thoughtful in whatever type of legislation comes out that we're looking at. You know, is there an unintended consequence that will result from this particular law that we can't pull back, or we can't change, you know, once it's in place?
I guess it's not just about the unintended consequences that are happening now. It can also be about the unintended consequences that happen in 5 years or 10 years time when you can't even foresee what might happen. And it's just adding that extra layer of potential issues when it comes to legislation or introducing new legislation.
Yeah, and I mean, because we can see what happened. I think what we're going through right now is an unintended consequence of creating the opportunity for NIL. Mm-hmm. I don't think when we first had this conversation, when the interim policy was put into place, that we would be where we are, you know, what, 2.5 years later.
Yeah.
And just how quickly we got here versus, as we were saying, thinking about what those consequences could be in the future. But in 2.5 years, we have gone from zero to... you know, to wherever, infinity at this point, if you really look at it in the big picture. It's just one of those things that now that we see where we're going, we just really need to be more careful and thoughtful as to what are our next steps.
And I think that leads us on very nicely to our next question. So over the past few years, we've seen a steady growth in popularity, investment and attention on women's sports. How much of this do you think can be attributed to the NIL deals acting as a bit of an equalizer between women and men's sports?
Well, I think there are two things going on right now. We have women's sports being, I guess you could say, they were getting increased media coverage. I think when the women's soccer team decided to sue for equal pay, we started on a whole new journey with women's sports. And with that, media broadcasters, sponsorships, everyone started seeing women as also potential investments in the sport area as they did with men. I think with NIL, we do see some activity for women coming along. We see a lot of high earners, but we also know that, you know, they are an anomaly to a certain degree as well. So I think with NIL, it does give us the opportunity to start bringing women into the space and to add to it. But as long as, you know, we start working on that increased media coverage, I think this year for volleyball has been great. When you think about the coverage of the NCAA Women's Final Four, that tournament was, you know, exceptional this year. So as we increase the visibility of women's sports, I think the opportunities for them to receive NIL also increase, which could bring them up a little bit closer to the men in what they see happen, what we see happening in their sports. But I do think it's going to take a concerted effort in order to get us there.
Off the field and into the offices, have you seen this increased interest in women's sports have a positive effect on the representation of women in in-house counsel roles or within university athletic departments?
Well, we're always limited in wherever we go, as we all know, but I do see an increase at the tables. I see more women looking at positions as athletic directors. Of course, you know, we have women at the table as senior women administrators. But more women are becoming involved, and they're seeing athletics as an avenue for, you know, employment and to find their way there. And I think with all of us, as we look at our experiences growing up and think about what we saw in sports and to see more females at the table, and we're able to give that perspective as to why we should have more females in the room and be able to give some ideas as to how it would help. How we can help bring around things that are going on in athletics department and in athletics as well.
And reflecting on the recent growth in women's athletics, both on and off the field, what change would you personally like to see for women's sports in the near future?
I want to see a steady growth, not a quick and fast and furious, you know, rise to the top. I think a steady growth, building a foundation to show that, you know, women's sports are here to stay. We're going to be involved. We're going to have some say as to how things operate. I'd like to see more sponsorships. I'd like to see more companies being involved with women's sports, and not just female-oriented companies. I want us to, you know, be able to have, you know, more Nike deals or, you know, more car deals, you know, just things that are general for everyone, not just women oriented products that, you know, you're going to cater to women, which women are going to buy. I just think that there should be more general marketing in the space and being able to, you know, provide a larger viewpoint for everyone.
We're here to that. And I just want to say thank you so much for spending your time with us today. We really appreciate you coming on. And until next time, keep your ears, eyes, and minds open for all the wins.